Welcome to Discovering Responsible Wealth. This is your host, Frank Congelos. Pleasure to be with you this week. You know, through the month of October, we've been talking about Financial Planning Month. And, you know, in light of what's been going on with the markets recently, I figured that we would spend a little time today talking about, you know, volatility, what to expect, what's going on, and to give you some insights. Our guest today is one of our frequent co-hosts and one of my partners over at CNA Financial Group, David Suki. Dave, it's a pleasure to have you on the show as always. Welcome.
Frank, thank you. Pleasure to be here again.
So, you know, the last month has been challenging for a lot of people. You know, we're hearing about Ebola. We're hearing about things going on, you know, in Europe. We're hearing about small companies. The stock market had, I think it was Wednesday this week, the market had dropped 400 points at one point in the day. Now, fortunately, it didn't end up there. But there's a lot of people that are getting very nervous about, oh, my goodness, what should I do with my 401k? Should I move? Should I take money out of the markets and so forth? And a lot of what we're hearing really becomes what I refer to as emotional. And I know, Dave, that you've been, you know, talking to people and so forth. What are you telling people as it relates to, you know, keeping their emotions in check and just helping them through some of the concerns that they may be feeling right now?
Yeah, so Frank, it's on everybody's mind, right? The news, you know, is all in front of us. The reality of any situation is we shouldn't be surprised by it, right? We should have expected it. We should expect it. It's the name of the game, right? The markets go up, the markets go down. And no matter if you're in the real estate market, stock market, bond market, commodities market, it's there's an up and down in all of them.
And it's funny that you say that, because the reality is that everybody knows that. We love when it goes up. But then when it starts going down, we don't want to face that part that we do. It could go down, and that it's probably at some point going to go down, but we don't like that.
That's correct.
And so what people start to do then is they start to say, can I outguess the market? What can I do and so forth? And that's where they get in danger with regard to really some of their planning.
And the natural instinct, Frank, is that taking action is what needs to happen. Like that's the solution is I need to do something. I can't just sit still. And yet, you know, we could share with our listeners, you know, about principles and discipline in investing over the years, what's proven to work. And a lot of times it's sitting still when all the noise is going on around you.
Great. And Dave, that's a great insight. You know, when you say that, and for our listeners, I'm going to give you some facts. And when I give you these facts, the reality is that you don't hear much about this, because when I call them the talking heads, you know, and that's on television and radio, and you might say, well, Frank, you and Dave are talking heads, but we're not really preying upon your emotions. We're just really trying to educate you so that you don't make a bad decision and perhaps blow up your retirement plan or whatever it is that you're doing. So here's some interesting facts that people should be aware of. You know, I went back to 1923. You know, which is, you know, going back to, like, you know, the Depression and so forth. And I took a snapshot of the market. And, you know, we have a research piece that we did that's been provided to us. And it talks about what they refer to as bull and bear markets. And here's an interesting one, which is bull and bear markets. Bull markets are up markets. Bear markets are down markets. And a correction is not necessarily a bear market. A correction is just a correction. But a bear market is typically, you know, where the market may go down 20% or whatever. And the reality is when we have this occur in our lives, it seems like an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember back in 2008, and I'm doing this now 30 years, so I've been through several of these cycles. It seems like this is the big one. You know, this is the one that's going to – it's the end all. It's not the same as the last. And we hear that every single time. You know, and it, you know, in 2008, we had that, you know, the financial crisis. But here's an interesting couple of statistics. From 1923 to 2011, the average bull market, from a time standpoint, lasts about 32 months. So it means that the market ran up for approximately 2.5 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The average bear market lasted about 11 months, less than a year. During those time frames, the average bull market going up, it was up 119%. So if I had a dollar when I was done with the bull market, I had a little more than $2, okay? The average bear market, I was down 27%. So I had a dollar, and I looked, and I said, I'm down to 73 cents. So what happens is when I'm going through it, okay, it feels like a lot. It feels like I'm really getting beat up. But the reality is that when we look at the time frames of what they are, they're not that long of a period of time.
No. And when you're going through it, it's when it's long.
Seems like eternity.
Well, I'll give an analogy maybe we can connect to. I know you're I know you exercise and you work out. And anybody you talk to at a high level in training our bodies will tell you, a lot of times the biggest growth comes from the last several minutes of the activity.
Great point.
So, but yet we may emotionally and our mind may tell us, oh, I can't go on any further. I can't go on any further. And yet if we do, typically we reap rewards in those areas. Same thing in the markets. It's very difficult to stay the course when every time you turn on a television or a radio, oh, the market was down again 300 points or 200 points or this is going on in the world. But the academics, which is what you shared, some research, we can go further into that topic around, you know, what's actually made people money over the years.
That's
not
great.
What we typically thought. It wasn't what I thought when I first learned it.
No. And, you know, and I've told the story before, which is, you know, visiting a friend of mine out in Minnesota and they saw a sign on the wall. You know, we actually have that sign now, you know, here, you know, because I liked it so much. But it was kind of, you know, a line that was drawn, and the line going up, you know, was showing that, you know, buy on greed, and then it showed the line going down, sell on fear, and then it was showing that, you know, repeat this process until you're broke. And so what occurs is that when the markets are off or they're showing volatility, people start getting nervous and they go, I can't afford to lose my money. And out of fear, they sell. And then they miss the bounce, okay? And then as the market's going back up, I guess it's safe to get back in the water. And so they're buying it again, but they're buying it at the top. You know, there's an organization out called Dalbar. Dalbar does a study of investor behavior. So Dalbar Analytics this year came out with their 2014 report. Their report basically points out that over the course of the last 20 years, that the Standard & Poor's 500 has averaged 9.22% per year. So if people had put their money in 20 years ago, sat with their money for the last 20 years, it averaged 9.2%. And then it has a section in there that talks about the average investor, however, equity investor, got 5.02%. They got about half of that. And here's the reality of that. The average investor actually got about zero. And here's why. Because there's people in there that stayed in the market. The professional investors stayed in. Okay? The other and so they got that 9.22. What happened was is there's a lot of people out there that got zero or they lost money.
Yep.
And so what happens is even though that might be the average, that average tends to be, you know, tilted towards the professional investors. And when I say professional, the people that know I shouldn't be jumping in, jumping out. And they're the ones that actually captured the return. There's a lot of people that we've met over the years who've actually earned almost nothing when you really figured it out.
Yes.
And it's a shame.
Yes. And Frank, you know, we study this investor behavior, and you got to realize the investor is a human being. And then inside the head of a human being, we're wired this way. And I've had many professionals tell me this. We will naturally move away from fear faster than we will move toward pleasure.
Great point.
So we're wired that way. I tell clients, it's not their fault we're wired that way. They just don't know any better. It's like a child doesn't know any better until it learns that ability or that capability. That's what we've learned over the 34 years now.
33 years.
They're going to be 34 soon, yeah.
So for all of our listeners, you know, our next, you know, point is that, so what should you be doing and what now? And the first thing I would tell you is, what's your real time frame? You know, it's like if you're 40 or 50 years old and, you know, this is a retirement account, you know, that you're looking at, if you're not retiring tomorrow, don't get too nervous, okay? And it's, you know, if you've done the right job, you have the right asset allocation, you've done a lot of the right things you should be doing, our whole thing is that understand what your real time horizon is so that, you know, you're not getting yourself in trouble. Now, on the other side of that, if my time horizon is that I'm about to pay for college next year, you know what? In a short time horizon, in that case, then you may consider saying, hey, you know what? I've made my return. It's time to take the money out and be ready for what's coming up next, whether it be college, education, home purchase. But time horizon is really key as far as that goes. So, Dave, maybe you'll take one of the next topics on there that we have.
And don't try to time the market. You know, don't don't be looking to think I need to be in and out, and that's how people make money, because over time that's not really – it's actually how they lose money.
I heard a great view. I was at a seminar on investing, and the one of the guest presenters said something, and it was interesting when I saw people respond. And he said, you know, every public stock out is currently owned. There's not a stock out there that's not owned.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the reality of it is, when you think it's a good time to sell, obviously someone thought it was a good time to buy. Because the only way that you were able to sell the share of stock that you had was that somebody thought it was a good time to buy it. And the price that you receive and the price that they paid was the fair market price.
Yes.
Because otherwise that wouldn't have been the price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would have said, I'm not paying that, in which case the price would have came down. Or you might have said, well, I'm not selling it at that, in which case the price would have went up.
That's right.
So the market is going to determine the right price, you know, as it relates to that.
And, Frank, so one you've spoke about before, don't chase track records.
It's a good one.
Right? What's common? And I used to see these commercials on TV, and I never understood them when I first got into this business, and which was back in 1998, basically. And it was like, I'd see these commercials where they'd show the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, or 10 year average on a mutual fund, let's say. And the 1 and 3 year numbers were high, but the 5 and 7 and 10 year numbers were low. And I always just dawned on me logically, doesn't that mean that it must lose, you know, short term it made money, but long term somewhere that it had to come down for the average over 10 to be less than what that 1 year number was. And yet a lot of investing decisions are based on those numbers, what someone did yesterday.
What happens is there's that disclosure, and the disclosure says past performance is not indicative of future results.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as it, you know, it's in our face, it's their disclosure, it's their disclaimer, so that they can say, see, we told you. The reality is most people buy past performance,
correct,
which is they look at what did you do last year, what did you do the last 10, 20 years, so that's what I should expect. And that's not reality.
No.
So, you know, the point is that you have to look at that and say, you know, if it says it on there and they made them put it on that brochure for a reason, maybe we should pay attention to that. You know, and, you know, there's a lot of investment advisors out there that unfortunately sell past performance because it's the easiest way for them to attract someone. It's almost like saying, I know you like pasta. Isn't this great pasta that I made last night? It might have been great last night, maybe not so great today.
Today. That's a good point. It's not for, you know, and we're not saying don't be aware of what past performance is, because
sure,
I think it's part of the equation. It's just not the deciding factor, nor should it be.
So, you know, it comes down to, so where do returns really come
mm-hmm.
from? And, you know, our belief is return comes from the market. You know, there's a lot of people out there that believe that returns come from the manager. And so, you know, we think that there's a conflict there that's being sold, and a lot of investment advisors think that they can outguess the market.
That's right.
We know that that's not true most of the time. In fact, there's studies that are done, and on the studies that are done, they actually show that historically the benchmarks have outperformed active management on a regular basis.
That's right.
So to try to pick out that superstar or that, you know, that one person that's going to be, you know, that person, the next Warren Buffett, the next Peter Lynch, it's probably not the reality.
And Frank, to consistently pick those people out, right? Because it's not like we get to pick one money manager and we stay with that money manager for 20 years or 30, my whole career. No, because money managers move. They get gobbled up somewhere else. So it's even, how do you consistently pick a money manager that's going to consistently beat the benchmark?
You know, it's funny, recently I was talking with a client and they mentioned Warren Buffett, and I said, well, I have a question for you. I said, so who knew who Warren Buffett was before
he was Warren Buffett?
Warren Buffett with his track record. You only knew he was good once he had the track record.
That's right.
So prior to him having a track record, nobody knew who he was. And then once he has the track record, the question becomes, okay, did he duplicate or could he duplicate what he had done in the past? And for most money managers, in fact, you know, there's a lot of information out, the answer is no.
Right.
And there's thousands of these that are out there, but that's the reality of, you know, what's occurring with investing.
So I was going to say, Frank, so if the return comes from the market and not consistently, not from the manager, so then the obvious question becomes, so what does that mean? Do I buy the market?
That is what it means. And actually there's been several studies that are done and the studies that have done are really telling you this, is that 94% of success in investing comes from having the right asset allocation. It's the right mix between large companies, small company, value, growth, international. All of those are forms of equity. The second side of that is that fixed income, which are bonds and cash and things of that nature, are really designed to provide more stability to a portfolio. Mm-hmm. And that's why the more equity you have, the more volatility, but you get paid for that volatility in what they call a premium or in the form of your return. But 94% of the return that you achieve or success comes from the asset allocation.
That's right.
Only 4% came from the selection of what they actually picked, and 2% came from if you happen to hit the right time.
So we started this, you know, this conversation around the times that we live in right now, the current state of affairs, and yet 2% of the portfolio's return comes from my timing on what I'm going to do, whether I should be in or out. Isn't that interesting? And yet everyone's asking, should I get out of the market? Should I stay in the market?
And what that really comes down to is the fact that, you know, the more that media can keep your eyes attached to that TV so you see the next commercial and we can sensationalize what's going on, the more success they're going to have,
Correct. Not
necessarily you. So as we're wrapping up our show today, for all of our investors and for all of our listeners, it's really been a great week to be with you. A couple of insights here is don't get emotional with your investing. Nobody has a crystal ball. And when I say nobody, nobody knows where the market's going to go up, down, or whatever. But if your time horizon is really long term, stay with that. You've been listening to Discovering Responsible Wealth. This has been Frank Congelos and Dave Suki. If you have questions, you could write to us at the Institute of Responsible Wealth, 2431 Atlantic Avenue, Manasquan, New Jersey, 08736, or email us at info@ifrw.com. Thank you and have a blessed week.